It is time for book picks once again. We have such a wonderful family of independent bookstores to supply our book picks. And this week, we go to the Bennington Bookshop. We welcome them back to tell us what's happening. They've been spending lots of time reading dozens and dozens of books and studying up. Owner Phil Lewis joins us this Tuesday morning with a terrific list of books to share, or a terrific list of books to share. You were here a few weeks ago. I missed you. I get to see you now. I thank you. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Joe.
Good to have you back on the program. All right. Where would you like to begin?
Okay, I'm going to begin with one that I tried to fit in the last show, but we ran out of time, and it's such a delightful book, I didn't want to neglect it. It's Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. When we first meet Eleanor Oliphant, she lives alone in a small apartment in Glasgow. She's withdrawn and socially awkward. She doesn't have any friends. She spends her weekends alone at home, consuming vast amounts of vodka and pizza. Once a week, she has a conversation with her mother. On weekdays, Eleanor follows a strict routine. She gets to work at 8:30 every morning, listens to the Archers every evening, and is in bed by 10, where she reads for half an hour before putting out the light. At work, Eleanor avoids her colleagues, burying herself in her work and timing her departure each evening so that she doesn't bump into them on the way out. It's her way of avoiding all those awkward social questions. What are you up to tonight? Plans for the weekend? Booked a holiday yet? When Eleanor's computer freezes at work one day, she's forced to track down the new computer technician, Raymond, for assistance. She's not impressed with what she finds. Raymond is everything Eleanor is not. Chaotic, haphazard, and disorganized. He's also a scruffy dresser. One night, as she leaves the office, Raymond is there to hold the door for her. As they exit, they witness a man collapse on the other side of the street. "He's drunk," Eleanor says. But Raymond rushes up to help the man and urges Eleanor to call an ambulance. And so they're thrown together. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine is a delightful novel about loneliness and friendship. It's quirky and amusing and full of heart. Eleanor is a rich character with a troubled past that she slowly learns to accept. In so doing, she takes the first tentative steps into a new world where friendship is possible. This is a charming read.
It is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. Next up.
Next up is The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. And just a word about this one. A lot of people come into the bookshop and they're worried about the amount of violence that might be portrayed in the book. And I always say to them, it's there, but it's not gratuitous. It's just part of the story and the story needs to be told. So please don't be put off by that because it's such a brilliant book. Anyway, here we go. It's 1960s Florida, the Jim Crow South. For Elwood Curtis, a young black teenager, it's the first day of college. He is excited to enroll at Melvin Gibbs Technical, a local school for blacks. He wants to check out the campus, or just sit in the quadrangle and breathe it in. He sets off south, thinking he can walk the 7 miles if he doesn't get a lift. His luck is in, it seems. The third car to come along stops for him. But Elwood Curtis is in the wrong place at the wrong time. Moments later, they are pulled over by a white deputy. The car has been reported stolen. Elwood is sentenced to the Nickel Academy, a juvenile reformatory where the inmates are expected to attend classes and labour in the fields and workshops. This regime constitutes the physical, intellectual, and moral training the Academy proudly claims as its mission. On his first night, Elwood intervenes in a fight. A couple of bullies are picking on a smaller boy. Once again, he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. Busted by a white houseman on his nighttime patrol, he's told that Mr. Spencer will take this up. At Nickel, justice is random and arbitrary. They come at 1 a.m. There's the sound of tires on gravel, doors slamming. The boys are rounded up and taken off to the White House, known as the ice cream factory by the white inmates, because they come out with bruises of every color. although based on people and events at the Florida School for Boys in Mariana, Florida, The Nickel Boys is a work of fiction. Whitehead's prose is hard, the tone unrelenting, a reflection of conditions at Nickel. Yes, there is violence, but it's never gratuitous. It's just part of the story, a story that needs to be told. This is a timely novel. It's a powerful and compelling read.
It's beautiful. It's small, too. It's,
that's
it's,
right, yeah.
It's a
yeah.
very easily... doesn't take long to read.
No, a weekend.
And it's and it is beautiful. Colson Whitehead's Nickel Boys is out. Next up.
Next up is The Long Call by Ann Cleves. So fans of Ann Cleves' earlier series, Shetland and Vera, are in for a treat with the first book in her new Two Rivers series. Set in North Devon, in the southwest of England, where Cleves grew up, The Long Call introduces Detective Inspector Matthew Venn and his colleagues Detective Sergeant Jen Rafferty and Detective Constable Ross May. There are tensions and rivalry between the team members, and May's connections with the higher-ups, who see him as the golden boy, add further strain. A body is discovered at Crow Point, an isolated beach between the mouths of the rivers Tor and Torridge. There's no ID, just a shopping list scrawled on the back of a crumpled envelope. The trail leads to a house in Ilfracombe, shared by two women, Caroline and Gabby, and the mysterious Simon Walden. Who is he? Where did he come from? And why was he killed? Then one of the students at the Woodyard Centre, a day centre for people with learning disabilities, is kidnapped. She's found 2 days later, abandoned in an overgrown garden. A second student goes missing. Time's running out. She's diabetic and without her medicine. As the pressure builds, the search becomes frantic, and the tensions between the characters mount. The Long Call is a thoughtful police procedural. Although not a thriller in the beat-em-up, shoot-em-up style, it's a real page-turner and very difficult to put down. There's no cheating or deliberate misdirection here. The reader is presented with all the evidence as the team discovers it. Cleese's local knowledge brings the settings to life. It's as if you are right there in the North Devon landscape, side by side with Venn and Rafferty as they unravel the mystery and identify Walden's murderer. This is a truly satisfying crime novel and augurs well for the new series.
It is The Long Call by Ann Cleves. All right.
Okay, next up we've got The Secrets We Kept by Lara Prescott. The Secrets We Kept is really two stories, expertly spun together. The first details the life of Olga Ivinskaya and her long-term relationship with Boris Pasternak, author of Dr. Zhivago. The second story relates the improbable American plot to undermine the Soviet Union by smuggling copies of Dr. Zhivago into the country. The book was banned in the USSR for its alleged criticism of the regime. There's an extra twist, the complex affair between two of the American spies, the beautiful Sally Forrester and her protege, Irina, the daughter of Russian emigres. Olga, Pasternak's mistress and muse, who was the inspiration for Lara in Dr. Zhivago, is sentenced to 5 years in one of the Soviet Union's bitter and brutal gulags. Her crime? To have praised Pasternak's work, which is viewed as anti-establishment. The reality is that the state wants to use her as leverage against Pasternak, but his love for her and loyalty to Olga are not as strong as hers for him. He sells the manuscript to an Italian publisher, and the book is widely published in the West to great acclaim. Irina is recruited to the typing pool at the recently formed Central Intelligence Agency. The opening paragraphs of the book set the scene perfectly. The privilege of the men, the servitude of the women. The girls, referred to by the men as Blondie or Red. But the women have secret names for the men too. There's Grabber and Coffee Breath and Teeth. And then there's Sally Forrester, who keeps herself a little apart from the group. Irina is intrigued by Sally and is quickly drawn under her influence. She finds herself recruited to a level of work and secrecy well beyond that of the typing pool. The book alternates geography and time periods, slowly bringing the disparate threads together in a beautifully woven masterpiece. It's superbly crafted, rich in detail, and subtle in plot. The secrets we kept will make you want to read or reread Dr. Zhivago. It will certainly make you want to look out for Prescott's next book, whenever that might appear.
Laura Prescott is the author of The Secrets We Kept.
Okay, and just one last thing about that one is, if you do buy the book, please take the dust cover off. The cover underneath is really beautiful, and it's hidden by the dust cover.
Ah, it's a secret that is kept.
There we go.
As it were. Okay.
Okay, next up is Olive Again by Elizabeth Stratt. And this is a sneak preview. The book doesn't come out for another 2 weeks.
Right.
She's back, Elizabeth Stratt's protagonist, Olive Kittredge, that cantankerous curmudgeon from Crosby, Maine, returns with a series of poignant scenes from life in the small coastal village. Olive's older now and has mellowed somewhat, but she's still very much Olive. This is a wonderful reflection on aging and on taking stock of our lives. Each chapter is like a short story. We jump forward through the span of Olive's last years, her marriage to longtime Crosby resident Jack Kennison, then widowed for a second time, coming to terms with her growing frailty. And in the background, always the question, what was the point? Stratt uses Olive's sharp observations to nail scenes so powerfully that you're left gasping or teary-eyed. Let me share a couple of the chapters. The Walk and the End of the Civil War Days. In the former, Denny Pelletier walks home on a cold December night. The rhythm of his steps throws him into a meditation on his life. It seems he's worried about how his children have turned out. But that's just where his meditation begins. As Danny nears his home, the realization dawns that it is not his children at all. It was himself about which something was wrong. He'd been saddened by the waning of his life, and yet it was not over. The End of the Civil War Days tells the story of Fergus and Ethel McPherson, an older couple who have not spoken to each other for 35 years. Their house is divided by yellow duct tape into his and hers sections, with tape even splitting the dining room table in half. They communicate with each other through their dog, Teddy. Teddy, I guess we'll go to the grocery store, Fergus says. I hope to heck Fergus doesn't forget the milk, Ethel responds. How can this sad state of affairs end meaningfully? Rest assured, it does. It's beautifully done. But all of the chapters are good. Funny, touching, sad. Just right. Stratt's writing is spot on. As Jack Kennison says in the opening chapter of the book, after a particularly trying day, dear Olive Kittredge, I have missed you.
Indeed. The name of the new book is Olive Again. It's by Elizabeth Stratt. It will be out on the
15th, I think. Yeah.
And then on the 17th, just a personal plug, on the 17th, I will be in conversation with Elizabeth Stratt at the Walker Auditorium in Lakeville, Connecticut. It's at the Hotchkiss School.
Oh,
so we'll be talking to her. And if you want more information about that event and to find out more information about the book, you can go to Elizabeth's website. It is elizabethstratt.com, but that's Thursday at 7 o'clock, Thursday, October 17th. So 2 days after the book comes out, we'll be in Lakeville, Connecticut, talking up Elizabeth Stratt.
Lucky you.
I do feel lucky. We have a minute left.
Okay, well, the last one I've got here is The Immortalists. I'll just give a very brief intro to it. It examines the relationship between choice and destiny and asks the question, how much of how we end up living our lives is planned and how much is chance? But this novel is much more than this. It's a richly realized exploration of the depths of familial ties, ties that remain firm despite the surface tensions brought on by day-to-day experience. Chloe Benjamin's characters, all flawed, are all the more real for their blemishes. It's a very rewarding read.
It is Chloe Benjamin's The Immortalists. For more information on the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont, you can go to their website, benningtonbookshop.com. You can also see the entire list by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Phil Lewis, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.